B. Reshaping traditional academics with communist ideology. Marxism-Leninism is the guiding ideology for every subject in communist countries, while in the West, academic freedom is a core focus. Aside from ubiquitous moral standards and academic norms, there shouldn't be any bias in favor of particular intellectual trends. But since the 1930s, socialism, communism, Marxism, and the Frankfurt School have entered American colleges in force, severely altering the humanities and social sciences. Revolutionary discourse occupies the humanities in America. In his book The Victim's Revolution, The Rise of Identity Studies and the Closing of the Liberal Mind, Bruce Bauer asked Alan Charles Coors, a historian at the University of Pennsylvania, about the three people he thought to have the deepest influence on the humanities in the United States. With hardly a pause, Coors named three books: Antonio Gramsci's Prison Notebooks, Paulo Freire's Pedagogy of the Oppressed, and Frantz Fanon's The Wretched of the Earth. Gramsci, the Italian Marxist, needs no further introduction as his work has been described in preceding chapters. Freire, a Brazilian educational theorist, adored Lenin, Mao, Castro, and Che Guevara. His Pedagogy of the Oppressed, published in 1968 and reprinted in English 2 years later, has become part of the mandatory reading for academic institutes in the United States. Bauer quoted the educator Saul Stern, who said that Pedagogy of the Oppressed doesn't concern itself with any specific educational problems, but is rather a utopian political tract calling for the overthrow of capitalist hegemony and the creation of classless societies. Freire's work does no more than repeat a certain point of view, which is that there are only two kinds of people in the world, the oppressor and the oppressed. The oppressed should, then, reject their education, be awakened to their miserable circumstances, and aroused to rebellion. Fanon was born on Martinique Island in the Caribbean Sea and joined the Algerian War against French colonial rule. His work, The Wretched of the Earth, was published in 1961, with a preface by French existentialist and communist Jean-Paul Sartre. Sartre summarized his theory as such: Western colonizers are the embodiment of evil, whereas non-Westerners are inherently noble by virtue of their being colonized and exploited. Fanon called on people in the colonies to revolt against the colonial ruling class, using violence as their rallying point. He said that at the level of individuals, violence is a cleansing force. It frees the native from his inferiority complex and from his despair and inaction, it makes him fearless and restores his self-respect. Embracing Fanon's ideas, Sartre wrote in the preface, "For in the first days of the revolt you must kill. To shoot down a European is to kill two birds with one stone, to destroy an oppressor and the man he oppresses at the same time, there remain a dead man, and a free man, the survivor, for the first time, feels a national soil under his foot." The ideas of Gramsci, Freire, and Fanon are deceptive narratives that entice people to regard history and society through the lens of class struggle. Once the spark of class hatred enters their hearts, students learn to resent and oppose the normal structure and workings of society, for which the inevitable solution is rebellion and revolution. Which particular theorist or school of thought has had the greatest influence on humanities and social sciences in American colleges is a matter of debate. What's clear, however, is that Marxism, the Frankfurt School, Freudian theory, and postmodernism, which worked alongside communism in destroying culture and morality, have come to dominate the field. Communist theory permeates academia. Since the 1960s, the discipline of literary research in the United States has experienced a fundamental paradigm shift across its various subfields, such as English, French, and comparative literature. Traditionally, literary critics appreciated the moral and aesthetic values of classic works, considering literature an important resource for broadening the reader's horizons, developing their moral character, and cultivating their intellectual taste. As a matter of principle, academic literary theory is secondary to the literature itself, serving as an aid to its comprehension and interpretation. Infused with the popular trends in philosophy, psychology, and culture, various types of new literary theories emerged in the academic community during the height of the counterculture movement in the 1960s. The relationship between theory and literature was thrown in reverse, as the actual works were reduced to material for validating modern interpretative approaches. What is the substance of these theories? Taken together, they make a mess of the traditional academic disciplines, such as philosophy, psychology, sociology, and psychoanalysis, in their slanted depiction of society and culture. As literary theorist Jonathan Culler put it, theory is often a pugnacious critique of common sense notions, and further, an attempt to show that what we take for granted as common sense is, in fact, a historical construction, a particular theory that has come to seem so natural to us that we don't even see it as a theory. In other words, modern academic theories belittle, reverse, and destroy the understandings of right and wrong, good and evil, beauty and ugliness that come from the traditional family, religious faith, and ethics, while replacing them with a sinister system devoid of positive values. Peeling off their labyrinthine academic packaging, these so-called theories are no more than a jumbling together of classical and neo-Marxism, the Frankfurt School, psychoanalysis, deconstructionism, post-structuralism, and postmodernism. Together they form an axis that aims to destroy the foundations of human civilization and serves as a camouflage for communism to steal into Western academia. Since the 1960s, communism has made rapid breakthroughs in areas such as literature, history, and philosophy, establishing its dominance in the humanities and social sciences. Theory, as has been discussed, is more or less the same thing as critical theory. Its permutations include the newly emerged critical studies of law, race, gender, society, science, medicine, and the like. Its pervasiveness is a manifestation of communism's successful expansion to the academic and educational fields, corrupting youth with deviated thought and laying a path for the eventual destruction of humankind. The politicization of literary research. From the perspective of a Marxist literary critic, the significance of a literary text lies not in its intrinsic value, but rather in how it reflects that the ideology of the ruling class, for example in terms of gender or race, became the dominant class. From this perspective, the classics are said to have no intrinsic value at all. A prominent American Marxist literary theorist outright declared that the political perspective constitutes the absolute horizon of all reading and all interpretation. That is to say, all literary works should be treated as political allegories, and only when the deeper meanings of class, race, gender, or sexual oppression are uncovered can one's understanding be considered profound or qualified. People from communist countries are familiar with this kind of dogmatic literary criticism. Chinese communist leader Mao Zedong evaluated A Dream of Red Mansions, one of the four great Chinese classics, as the following: Four Families, Fierce Class Struggle, and A Few Dozens of Human Lives. In communist countries, literary discourse is not always confined to civilized and sophisticated debates of the ivory tower. It can sometimes morph into the impetus for bloody struggle. In response to Mao Zedong's call to learn from the honest and upright Ming dynasty official Hai Rui, historian Wu Han penned the stage drama Hai Rui Dismissed from Office. On November 10, 1965, Shanghai's Wenhui News published a critical review of the play. The review was authored by Yao Wenyuan and jointly planned by Mao's fourth wife, Zhang Qing, and radical theorist Zhang Chunqiao. It claimed that Hai Rui Dismissed from Office was an allusion to Peng Dehuai, a People's Liberation Army general who was purged for his opposition to the three red flags, the Communist Party's three policies of the General Line for Socialist Construction, the Great Leap Forward, and the People's Communes. These three policies led to the Great Chinese Famine. The criticism of Hai Rui Dismissed from Office became the fuse that set off the decade-long brutality of the Cultural Revolution. The Chinese Communists' crude approach to interpreting all literary works in terms of class struggle can be contrasted with the much subtler literary criticism found in Western colleges over the last few decades. Western neo-Marxist literary criticism is like a virus that becomes stronger and more deadly through endless mutation. It adapts other theories to become its weapons, dragging the great works of human culture, from the classics of Greece and Rome to Dante, Shakespeare, and Victorian novels, onto the literary operating table to be dismembered and reconfigured. Though this type of commentary makes use of arcane jargon to create the veneer of sophistication, the main arguments typically boil down to accusations of prejudice against disenfranchised classes, women, or ethnic minorities. Modern critiques label these works as belonging to the superstructure of the ruling class, and describe them as having the effect of numbing the masses to their oppressive conditions and preventing them from achieving revolutionary class consciousness. As English scholar Roger Scruton said, the methods of the new literary theorist are really weapons of subversion, an attempt to destroy humane education from within, to rupture the chain of sympathy that binds us to our culture. The Marxist theory of ideology. Ideology is a core concept in the Marxist-influenced humanities. Marx viewed morality, religion, and metaphysics collectively as ideology. He believed that the dominant ideology in a class-based society was the ideology of the ruling class, and that its values did not reflect reality as it existed, but rather its inverse. 20th century neo-Marxism has made the destruction of culture a necessary stage of revolution and makes extensive reference to ideology in its literature. The Hungarian Marxist Georg Lukács defined ideology as the false consciousness as opposed to the real class consciousness. French Marxist Louis Althusser proposed the concept of the ideological state apparatuses, which include religion, education, family, law, politics, trade unions, communication, culture, and so forth, that would work in conjunction with a brutal state apparatus. Cunning sophistry can be found within the concept of ideology. Every society or system has its shortcomings that should be articulated and corrected. However, Althusser and other Marxists do not concern themselves with specific problems. Instead, they reject the system in its entirety on the grounds that the system is a structure set up and maintained by the ruling class to safeguard its interests. Poisoning the well is an important aspect of the Marxist fixation on ideology, and can be seen in Althusser's complicated ideological critique. Instead of examining the factual merits of an argument, the ideological approach relies on accusing opponents of harboring ulterior motives or being of the wrong background. Just as no one can drink water from a poisoned well, subjecting a person to rumors or other forms of character assassination makes his opinion unacceptable to the public, no matter how reasonable or logical. Althusser's all-inclusive concept of ideological state apparatuses reflects communism's extreme contempt for human society. Nothing is acceptable, short of complete rejection and destruction. This is a manifestation of communism's aim to eradicate human culture. The Marxist concept of ideology rests on abstract, generalized, and superfluous false propositions that aim at purging traditional moral values. While masking their real intentions by expressing ostensible moral indignation, Marxists have deceived and influenced vast numbers of people. Postmodern Marxism. In the wake of the 1960s, a group of French philosophers created what soon became the most powerful ideological weapon for Marxism and communism in the American academic community. Representative among them are Jacques Derrida and Michel Foucault, and recent data provides some picture of their influence today. In 2007, Foucault was the most cited author in the humanities, with 2,521 citations. Derrida ranked third, having been cited 1,874 times. There have been eye-opening observations made about the relationship between postmodernism and Marxism. We find it apt to refer to them collectively as postmodern Marxism. The fact that language possesses ambiguous and multifaceted layers of meaning, and that a text may have different interpretations, has been common knowledge since at least the time of the ancient Greeks and pre-imperial China. Derrida's theory of deconstruction is an elaborate deception that combines atheism and relativism and works by exaggerating the ambiguity of language to break down texts even in which the meaning is clear and well-defined. Unlike conventional atheism, Derrida expressed his views in the language of philosophers. As a result, his viewpoints are not only destructive to the idea of God, but also to the concepts of rationality, authority, and meaning as associated with traditional beliefs, as theorists aligned with Derrida carry out their deconstruction of these terms. Having deceived many people with its veneer of intellectual depth, deconstructionist theory went rampant throughout the humanities and took its place as one of communism's most potent tools for destroying faith, tradition, and culture. Michel Foucault once joined the French Communist Party. The essence of his theory revolves around the notion that there is no truth, only power. Since power monopolizes the right to interpret truth, anything that purports truth is hypocritical and untrustworthy. In his book Discipline and Punish, Foucault asked the following question: is it surprising that prisons resemble factories, schools, barracks, hospitals, which all resemble prisons? In equating the indispensable institutions of society with prisons and calling on people to overthrow these prisons, Foucault lays bare the antisocial nature of his theory. Armed with the weapons of deconstruction, Foucault's theory, and other critical theories, scholars have stigmatized tradition and morality by relativizing everything. They thrive on axioms like all interpretation is misinterpretation, there is no truth, only interpretations, or there are no facts, only interpretations. They have relativized the understanding of basic concepts such as truth, kindness, beauty, justice, and so on, and then discarded them as trash. Young students entering the faculties of liberal arts dare not question the authority of their instructors. Staying clear-minded under the sustained ideological bombardment that follows is harder still. Once geared to the study of postmodern Marxist theory, it is difficult to get them to think in any other way. This is a major means by which communist ideology has been able to run amok in the humanities and social sciences.